Hello, I'm Badis, and welcome to the Implement Podcast. This is a podcast where we have great conversations about marketing, growing brands, and what it takes to be a great marketer. If you're interested in keeping up with the podcast episodes and the amazing content we produce at Implement, you should definitely subscribe to our newsletter. Just go to join-implement.com to subscribe. All right, enough self-promo, let's dive into this new episode, and thanks again for tuning in. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Implement Podcast. Today, I have a special guest who is Greg Holtzman. Greg is the Director of Partnership Marketing and Communication at a company called Brainbase. Greg, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. Could you maybe introduce yourself to the audience before we start?
Yes, thank you for having me. Once again, my name is Greg Holtzman. I am the Director of Partnership Marketing and Communications for Brainbase, which is a tech company based in Los Angeles, California, that helps brands manage and monetize their intellectual property. Pretty much our mission as a company is to make the intellectual property or IP industry more open, efficient, and accessible with technology. And the real innovative and disruptive nature of the company and our CEO is what led me to join. Some more background on me before Brainbase, where I've been there for a year and a half. I worked at one of the biggest entertainment talent companies in the world called Endeavor. I was in the global marketing group there, where I was doing marketing and PR for major brands such as Under Armour, Dick's Sporting Goods, New Amsterdam Vodka, Apothic Wine. And before that, I actually worked in film for 2 years, and I was doing marketing and PR for independent films, mostly documentaries. So my career has kind of been a little bit all over the place, jumping from film to an agency where it was like sports and alcohol brands. And now I'm in the tech world doing something completely different that I've done in my previous jobs in my career so far. And it's super exciting. And I'm excited to kind of tell you more and what we're doing on the podcast.
Yeah, sounds really exciting. I'd love to dive a bit more into your background, your career before joining Brainbase. But just to make sure I understand Brainbase, could you maybe give us an example or a sort of a use case of how brands use your company and what kind of value do you offer them, and sort of walk us through the whole consumer experience there.
Mm-hmm. So some of our customers are the biggest brands in the world when it comes to licensing out their intellectual property. So if you're if someone's unfamiliar with intellectual property, it's pretty much, it's anything you own. It could be a logo, it could be a character, it could even be, a tagline. You could own the rights to a line from a song and license it out to a company that makes t-shirts and receive royalties from the sales of those t-shirts. So we work with some brands such as BuzzFeed, BBC Studios, Kathy Ireland Worldwide, Sanrio, who own Hello Kitty, as well as a few other characters. And the way these companies use our platform is they manage their entire licensing operations on our platform. So they have a dashboard where they could see how their whole licensing business is doing. Everything from tracking what categories are performing best, what territories are performing best, which licenses are performing best, basically a really high level snapshot of how your licensing business is doing. And then they could dive deeper into certain processes such as sales and royalty reporting, which is one of the automated features of our platform. So basically if Sanrio is working with a clothing company like for Hello Kitty, and the clothing company, they upload their sales report after Q1 or Q2 or, 6 months. Basically, the royalties that are owed to Sanrio will automatically get calculated on our platform and be 100% accurate. So that way, someone from Sanrio doesn't have to spend 2, 3, 4 hours double, triple checking to make sure they're getting paid the right amount of royalties from whatever products their partner, their licensee is selling. Some other features we have are creative approvals. So think about being able to, approve and reject creative submissions right on the spot. It's a really great collaborative tool. We have a deals pipeline to keep track of all of the deals you're working on, what company you're perhaps partnering with, what stage the deal is in, the monetary value. We have a digital asset management system. So you could house all of your digital files on our platform. You could get a signature on anything with a DocuSign integration. We also integrate with several different apps as well. We have contract management. So very soon, companies will be able to redline right within our platform. But basically, if you're collaborating on a contract with someone else, you can collaborate right within the app. That way you don't have to email back and forth and send redline Word documents. Basically, everything you need to do to manage a licensing deal, which a lot of people still do manually, where they use, competitor systems. We have the latest and best tech to do it. It's cloud-based, great security, and all these processes are in one place, which is super helpful because, think about anyone's job. If you're using technology, if you could have all of your documents and all of your submissions and all of your collaborations, everything all on one platform, God, that would make, anyone's life a whole lot easier. Especially if you could log in remotely from anywhere too, which is the beauty of cloud-based technology these days. You don't necessarily need to be at one computer, like your work computer, to access something. You could be on an iPad, on a phone. You could be like at the Apple store. And as long as you have your login, you can log into, Brainbase and access whatever you need to access.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's, frankly, it's the first time I hear about a solution like this. And I think it's awesome. And I'm excited to learn more. And, how about you, like your role specifically within the company? So are you more in the acquisition of brands, more on the like the sort of licensors, or I don't know how you'd call them, but people licensing basically? Because you guys have a sort of a marketplace going on as well. Like, what is your role in the company exactly?
So I came on as Brainbase's first marketing hire in October of 2019. The company had just raised their seed round, which was $3 million. And it was time to really start properly marketing the product. And so when I came in, it was doing product marketing, brand marketing, kind of everything under the marketing umbrella. Now I'd say, most of my work, we've brought on someone else to help me out. My colleague, Caroline, who's great, and she does a lot of the brand and product marketing now. But a big chunk of my role is partnership marketing and communications and a little bit of business development as well. So really my goal is, what can I do within our marketing function to, number one, or first priority, drive customer acquisition? Because we're a startup, we're 4 years old, we want customers and we want revenue, and those come hand in hand. Second, I'd say, is my second objective is brand awareness. Because of course, brand awareness in the short run and the long run can of course lead to customer acquisition as well. But when you come up with marketing strategies that are really focused on lead gen, and kind of the secondary objective is brand awareness, that's definitely what we're aiming for right now. So I'd say, yes, I'm with marketing, I'm using our customers in marketing. So for example, Kathy Ireland, we've done a webinar with her, we have a customer testimonial with her. We put spend behind it on paid media. I'm trying to figure out, and it's still a work in progress. I'm still learning. I'm still figuring it out. Is, what is the best way using our product, using our customers, storytelling about our fundraising, our investors, our CEO, really what is the best way to convince people and say, listen, work with Brainbase, be our customer, use our product, because we think we're the best solution. But it's still, I'd say I'm still a work in progress. Our marketing department is still a work in progress. Just trying to figure out like, what is the best formula? What is the best way to try and bring people on board? And, the licensing industry, it's a tricky industry because there's a lot of old school folks that do things very manually. They've been using the same processes for 10, 20, 30 years. And I've encountered people who have been in the industry for 40 years. So it's very hard to convince people to switch to a very new platform that will help their business for the next 40 years. But think about it, if you're in your 50s or even your 60s, sometimes it's tough to convince people to adopt a technology that will move their business forward for years to come when they probably won't be at the company anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's definitely harder when the early adopters you're looking for are not early adopters in their, let's say, their consumer behavior and their tech literacy and all that. So it's even harder. And talking about that, actually, I'm curious, maybe could you share with us, what was a bit successful, in your experiments, what was, a bit less successful, and, maybe one or two experiments you've made and the results you had with your marketing and Brainbase.
Yeah, I'd say I'll start with what's been unsuccessful. And I think it's primarily because of, like I said, the licensing industry is tough. The customers we can go after, it's a limited number because only certain companies, license out their IP and really have a robust licensing business. There are some big companies that I'd love to work with, but they just don't do licensing, which is why, we're expanding our products to go beyond just licensing, which I could touch on later. But what's been interesting is paid media. So if we're putting money on ads behind, on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, it's great for brand awareness. And people do see them, but we haven't really seen people book demos. It really hasn't generated leads for us the way we wished it has. And like I said, that's because it's probably the nature of the licensing industry, because these platforms like ours, they're very robust. It's really tough to get a snapshot of what someone like Brainbase can offer in just one paid ad. And so we really have to be creative and concise and really storytell in that one ad, that tiny little box that could somehow convince people like, hey, at least book a demo with us. You might not be convinced to use us right on the spot, but at least book a demo with us. So we've actually brought on a growth marketing consultant and we're doing different tests and we are trying to find, what is a good way to drive leads with paid media, because so far, we just haven't been too successful with it. Now, where we have seen success is with our partnerships. And the licensing industry is very, I'll use the word chummy. People like to form relationships. They like to be very close to each other. It's a lot of deal making. And a lot of the deals in the licensing industry are made between friends. These people have been going to the same conferences and getting drinks and dinners and hanging out for years and years and years. And these in-person conferences are really where relationships are formed. And this could be said of any industry. Ask anyone in the licensing industry and they love these conferences. They love to go and say hi to their friends and make these relationships stronger. And these are where the deals are made. And this was actually kind of the thinking behind our marketplace, which you mentioned earlier. Because our thinking is, why should people wait for these conferences to make deals and form relationships? Why can't they do it online? So Marketplace, which has been pushed back a bit for other products we're releasing before it, will eventually be a place for anyone who wants to forge a licensing deal, make a new connection with a company that they probably have to stalk someone on LinkedIn to try and get a hold of them. You can now be matched up on this marketplace and do a licensing deal entirely online. So that's kind of the thinking behind the marketplace. But back to what has been successful, are these virtual conferences we've been a part of, and it's negotiating the right deliverables and finding the right package that works for us in our offering. So thought leadership has been great for us. Our CEO, Nate Kavanaugh, has spoken on some panels and done some keynote speeches. We have participated in some online matchmaking, which has been great for our sales team. So most of the leads have come from us basically buying sponsorship packages where we get like unlimited matches. So basically our sales team could go crazy at these virtual conferences and just request meetings with companies from all over the world. I think there's one conference where we had close to like 150 meetings between myself and a few members of our sales team. So that's really been successful for us. Our own podcast actually has driven a few leads for us, which I host, which is great. And we still do a MailChimp. We have our blog. And we try and become a content machine ourselves because you just never know when a lead is going to come from your own content you put out. But I'd certainly say that, you know, earned media, press, and partnerships has definitely been more successful than the digital marketing side of things. But I'm hoping that changes very soon. And I think we're going to find a way, hopefully, especially with the new products we're launching for digital marketing, to be more of a success driver for us and generate more leads.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all by everything you said in the sense that I feel like it's the same for a lot of, enterprise B2B companies that sort of target to a very, you know, restricted number of potential targets. And I'm not surprised at all. And I think, digital marketing is really difficult I feel like it's not the right tool, right? It's not the right tool for who you're trying to reach, and it can get really hard. And but there are companies that are successful with it. But I'm not surprised when you you talked about what actually works. One thing that actually kind of caught my attention is the I'd love to talk more about it. Is the sort of events matching. So mm-hmm. You guys actually go to virtual events, I guess, since yes. COVID. You buy like a sort of a premium, ticket or something, and you spend a lot of time matching. I've been to these conferences, and so you're using the platforms that are given by the event company, or are you targeting people like outside of that on LinkedIn, or like how does that process work? I'm interested.
Yeah, so the event company, so for example, one company called Informa, they put on a lot of the licensing conferences and exhibits. And so they're the ones who are really doing the virtual events. So what they'll do is they'll work with a tech company who has a platform for a virtual event. And for example, what we've done is we'll have a virtual booth, and we'll kind of upload all of our marketing assets, and we'll have someone staff our virtual booth in case anyone stops by to, have a meeting with us. So the virtual booth will be part of the package. We usually like to get some sort of thought leadership as part of it. So whether it's giving a keynote speech or being a part of a panel, that's usually very important for us. Usually we like for a social media post to be included about us. So the event organizer will post about us online. They'll perhaps notify attendees and then with the matchmaking, usually if there's matchmaking involved, usually you could purchase a package that has unlimited matchmaking. Sometimes you only get a limited number of, maybe it's like you get 50 or 100 invites to send out. But for us, that's probably one of the most important parts of these conferences, virtual and in person. It is meeting people and it is making those connections. So if you could take advantage of buying an unlimited package, all it really takes is usually one customer or one prospective customer to come through and become a customer to get ROI and to make that worth it. It's great that people are doing them because, people could have easily just given up during the pandemic. Like, listen, we're just going to take off from conferences and networking until this thing is over. Sorry, folks, you're just going to have to wait until everyone is vaccinated until we can meet in person again. But it's been really refreshing and surprisingly great to see how event organizers in all different industries have really stepped up and delivered great virtual experiences to still network and tell people what your offering is and allow, especially us tech B2B companies, really allow us to still market ourselves in a really tough time for getting customers. You know, budgets have been slashed. People are very distracted. They're at home with their kids. You know, sometimes you're not really getting the audience you would normally get in a non-pandemic time. So being able to participate in these and get an audience is super important.
Yeah, absolutely. I think actually the pandemic made people more eager to connect because they have like this need. They can't fulfill them. They're not meeting enough people. And I've seen this because I launched this podcast like back in November, last December. And it's been great. The response of people of just coming here and meeting and talking and sharing, you know, with their network. And it's, I think there's people haven't stopped wanting connecting with others and, you know, building relationships. It's just that I think maybe, it's just we're a bit more restricted in what we can do. So, but it's great that you guys managed to, you know, to bank on these events. And I think it's a great strategy. I want to talk a little bit more about what you've done before. And you told me you worked in the talent industry. And, I'm curious to know more about that. So you were basically putting, brands and talent like athletes or like, I think you worked with athletes a lot. Yeah. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah. So I worked on a variety of clients during my time at Endeavor. And I worked within the global marketing group, usually doing kind of PR, influencer marketing, sponsorships. Sometimes it was just one, a combination of two, a combination of three. It really depended on the client. But the objective was always, what can we do to get the most exposure for our clients and whatever their kind of marketing objectives were? So usually it was around launching a new product or just promoting an existing one. But let's just say, you know, from New Amsterdam Vodka, it's launching a new product. It's how can we get the most brand awareness and generate the most media coverage for this new product launch? So for example, something that you could read about online a lot is, you know, when New Amsterdam Vodka launched their new flavored vodka, the Pink Whitney, it was in partnership with Barstool Sports. And basically they saw that Barstool had like a very engaged audience. They basically did a bit of testing and they saw that, wow, you know, that this audience is really resonating with our product, with New Amsterdam Vodka. They sponsored this podcast called Spit and Chiclets. The hosts of the podcast love the vodka. And they decided to partner with the podcast and come up with this new vodka, the Pink Whitney. And it's been the most successful flavored vodka in like New Amsterdam Vodka history. So those are the type of partnerships we would, you know, advise them on, whether it's with a brand or it's with talent. So for example, with Under Armour, you know, they have their own talent. So, you know, I'd work on, you know, shoe launches from the lines of Bryce Harper and Steph Curry and Joel Embiid. And so it was, you know, what can we do to, you know, promote ESPN or Slam or setting up an experience at like NBA All-Star Weekend. So it was different when a brand had their own athlete, their ambassadors, someone like Dick's Sporting Goods, where they don't exactly have athletes with their own lines, that's where we'd have to vet talent and come up with who they should partner with. So for example, you know, we would look at athletes and say, okay, like what's going on with their career, with what they're doing in their life? Does it match up with the Dick's Sporting Goods brand? And then if it lined up with the brand and what we were working on, you know, we would of course help negotiate the deal with the athlete. You know, we'd reach out to their agent, see if they want to get involved. And once that deal was booked with their agent, then we would kind of set the whole thing up, whether it was, you know, a charitable event, them kind of like showing up and surprising a bunch of kids at a Dick's Sporting Goods store, or if it was filming content that we could then, you know, send out to media. Then it was our job for kind of executing once we landed the deal with the talent. But what was cool to see is that talent could really be a great driver for a new product launch or an initiative. You know, sometimes it's really tough for a brand to get press and coverage on their own, and they need to rely on the brand equity of others to really, you know, go viral or, you know, get coverage. And that's where talent partnerships really come in. So if you are launching a new product, you have some sort of initiative at your company, and you don't have a strong, loyal following, a lot of followers on your social media pages, or you just need to drive buzz and like just partner with someone super cool, you know, that's where talent comes in. But, you know, you need to be careful. We would always vet them like very, very, very closely, you know, make sure there aren't any red flags. I mean, obviously, if, you know, someone, you know, went to jail or was in trouble with the law or had some negative press about them, like it was our job to catch that before we make the recommendations to the brand. But finding the right talent could really help drive sales and awareness. And it makes, you know, people want to talk about it. Because if, you know, if we're partnering with a celebrity, you know, for example, one client I worked on was Purina Pro Plan, which is dog food. Think about it. Like, how am I going to get People Magazine to write about dog food? It's tough. But if I'm partnering, which I did, is we partnered with Andy Roddick, who's, you know, one of the most famous tennis players in the world, even though he's retired now, still one of the most popular figures. If I have Andy Roddick and I'm pitching People Magazine, I'm like, hey, I'm emailing you on behalf of Purina Pro Plan. You know, we're partnering with Andy Roddick. They're like, oh yeah, we want to speak with Andy. But for me, I'm like, okay, you want to speak with Andy? You've got to write about this new dog food we're launching though. Like, it's kind of like a quid pro quo. And that's really how the world of brand PR sometimes works, is you partner with the celebrity, and in return, media, they get to speak with the celebrity, but they have to talk about your brand. And so that was kind of interesting to see as well.
That's really amazing. Like, I've never actually heard about this this sort of system. So I'm really excited to learn about this. You know, maybe, I don't know, the question I'm having right now is, what are sort of the key drivers of success for a partnership? You know, whether it's with another brand or with a talent, what can make it work and what can make it sort of fall through and, you know, be a disaster? Because I think it can happen as well. Like every partnerships, you know, there are risks, and it's not, you're dealing with people. And so, but I mean, let's talk about it from the point of view of success. Like, what are the drivers? What are the things you should pay attention to if you want your partnership to be successful?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like for New Amsterdam Vodka, I was running their sponsorship program for a few years. Basically, what I would do is I would sponsor events. Sometimes it would be, you know, I would pay to sponsor. Sometimes it would be a trade deal where I just provide product. But what success was for me was when, you know, I would be able to invite press and invite influencers. So if I was sponsoring a Grammy party, or if I was sponsoring a Super Bowl party, which I did do, if I was able to invite influencers, invite press, get press to cover and write about our sponsorship, get influencers to post on social media about the sponsorship and their experience and how much they love the product, sending these people to like a Grammys party or a Super Bowl party, like, that is so cool. Like, that's, you know, it's aspirational. You know, if we're getting the impressions and there's like very positive sentiment online from those partnerships, and that was a success for us. Sometimes it was hard to measure if people would then go and actually buy the product. But that was seen as a success. I'd say if you're doing more of like a digital partnership, if you could somehow track via like a URL, if people are purchasing your products through that link on the tracking, I mean, that is of course a huge driver for success. You know, especially with influencer partnerships now, whenever they do like a swipe up on Instagram or they put a link in their bio, you can of course track how many people are clicking, how many people are swiping up, which is great. I mean, influencer marketing is one of the easiest, best ways to track, you know, how well your partnerships are doing. But yeah, I'd say those are kind of the best ways for a successful partnership to come about is really when you could, you know, tie in as many elements as possible. And, you know, of course, being at, whether it's an event partnership or a digital partnership, it's getting that brand awareness, it's driving impressions, and it's, you know, driving clicks, whether it's to your website or it's to a retail partner of yours to drive sales. I'd say those are the best ways to find success, and always ask for more. You know, whenever you're negotiating a partnership, always start with like everything you want and then go down from there. I mean, there are times where, you know, I would bluff and I would threaten to walk away from a partnership because I wasn't getting everything I wanted for my client. And I'd say most of the time it worked, where they'd be like, okay, like we'll give you all of that. Like, you know, usually if you're spending money with them, they're willing to throw in a little bit more. And sometimes they would say, you know what, we're gonna walk away. Like, you're asking for too much. And then I'd be like, okay, like let's find a compromise. But it's always a negotiation. But I'd say whenever, if you're a brand, whenever you could tie in media, tie in influencers, and you know, get them to post, you know, that's where these partnerships really are a home run.
Yeah. Thanks for the advice. It's great to have your experience on this topic. And so, you know, talking about your experience, like I'm wondering how did you start in this? And you know, from what I saw on, you know, on your profile, and I've seen that you have a sort of a focus on sports, and so is that how you kind of fell into this? Was it a sort of passion that you wanted to, you know, just have in your job and in your day to day? Like, how did you start in all this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always wanted to work in sports my whole life. My dad worked as an executive at the NFL for 14 years, and now he's been at the Yankees for 12 years. And so I kind of grew up in the sports world, sitting in on his meetings, and he was always my kind of my mentor and my inspiration to work in sports. So I actually majored in sports marketing at NYU. But even with my dad, who was kind of a prominent figure in the sports world, when I graduated from school, I honestly still had trouble getting a job in sports. You know, I graduated in 2013, and I think the job market, it was a time when I was competing, you know, we were only, this was 4 or 5 years after our kind of our economic depression collapse in 2008, 2009, from the whole housing market crisis and, you know, crazy times. And I think we were still kind of recovering from that during that time, and especially in the job market. So I was competing against a lot of folks who were, you know, 2-3 years out of school. So if I'm applying for a job with a sports team or a league or, you know, a stadium, and, you know, if you're looking at me, who's like 21, 22, just out of school, and you're looking at someone who's 24, 25, who maybe has a little bit of experience, and we're applying for the same job, you know, the company might hire the person who's a little bit older and more mature. So, you know, I had to open my horizons a bit, and that's why my first job was in film. I found a great agency to work at, so I was pretty lucky. But I still wanted to work in sports, and I knew it was one of the leading agencies in the sports world. They do sports licensing, college sports marketing. They represent some of the top athletes in the world. So I kept applying, and probably my fifth or sixth time interviewing there and applying, I finally got in through this PR group. And that's how I got into IMG/Endeavor. IMG, you know, they merged with WME, William Morris Endeavor, and that's where the Endeavor name came about. But really it was persistence. And I talk with people who are looking to work in sports or get their dream job all the time, and I just say, keep knocking at the door, you know, email the recruiter, reach out to them on LinkedIn, maybe apply for a job at the company that might be easier to get than the one you want, just so you can get your foot in the door. So for example, if you really, really want to be in the marketing department, but there's a job opening in sales where there's a few job openings, and you really don't want to do sales, maybe just go for it. See if you like it. worst comes to worse, try it out for a year and try and transfer over to the marketing department. But at least you're at your dream company and you're building connections. And you could ask the CMO or the head of marketing to meet for lunch or coffee every few weeks and get to know them. And it's much easier to get your dream job when you're already working at that company than when you're an outsider. So I've definitely learned a lot about job hunting over the years, but it took me just applying several times. And I really enjoyed working in sports for those few years at IMG. I'm trying to get some sports customers right now for Brainbase, because of course sports licensing is huge. But I really enjoyed the transition to tech, because I get to work with companies and brands in all different industries. Like our customers, I mentioned before, BuzzFeed is a big digital publisher. Sanrio owns a big character. Our new customer, BBC Studios, they have like Doctor Who and they have His Dark Materials, one of my favorite shows on, I believe it's HBO or Showtime. It's great. And the sports industry is super exciting, but it's a tough field to get into and to stay in as well.
Yeah, it's inspiring to hear about all this. And you applied 5 times to the same company. That's really, it sounds amazing to me.
I've applied more times to other companies as well. I've had some dream companies I've wanted to work for, and there was nothing stopping me from getting a job. I'd apply to a job that I was too experienced for, where I didn't have enough experience, because you just never know. And I was really passionate about working for some companies and brands that I really enjoyed in my personal life. Because if you could mesh, brands or things or services that you use in your personal life and go and eventually work for them, I mean, that's kind of like a great feeling. Like if you love wearing Nike products and you go and you work for Nike, I mean, you're probably going to feel like you're in like Disney World. Even as I'm wearing my Disney shirt right now. That's kind of, the other thing I tell people is like, what are you passionate about in your personal life? And if you could kind of mesh that with your professional life, those are the people who I find are most happy in their careers, is when it doesn't feel like a job.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think it's a great story of persistence. And I would just give a bit of nuance on the apply for in another department advice, because I think it's you still need to perform. I mean, obviously, yeah. I mean, of course, you. I mean, if they hire you in sales, it's like because they think you're gonna make it and you're gonna actually perform. But I think it's it can be a good compromise, obviously, to go and start in another department and make connections. But like, you still have to to do the job and perform and at least stay for some time.
Of course. I'd say, listen, like, go in that sales job or whatever department, that you maybe you get hired in, and absolutely kill it. But a lot of people do this all the time. They'll network with people in other departments, especially if you're opening. You could interview it for it internally and go for it. I mean, when I was at Endeavor, it's something I tried to do, where I was doing a lot of PR and influencer marketing. I kind of wanted to be more on the partnership side of things. So I would look for openings in turn and try and switch over. I could say when I started at Endeavor, my clients were Purina and New Amsterdam Vodka, which were not sports accounts. And I really wanted to work in sports. So I took the job because it was a great company. I really wanted to be there. And I was patient and I waited, I believe it was like a year and a half or 2 years before I got onto my first sports account, which was Under Armour. And that is kind of a case where I took the job at the company because I loved the company. And even though it wasn't the ideal client scenario because I wasn't working directly in sports, I was patient. I did an amazing job. And when I interviewed internally for the Under Armour account, I did such a good job with New Amsterdam Vodka and Purina Pro Plan that they brought me on. And that's just a case of how it could work.
Yeah, absolutely. And no, I think it's you know, it's a great story, and it's true that in a lot of especially in marketing, like there are a lot of companies that are super competitive, and yeah, sometimes it's you know, I'd give the same advice with kind of avoiding sort of more operational marketing type of jobs, because you know, a lot of junior people, especially, they get out of school and they want to be, you know, working on big campaigns and branding and strategy and things that are you know, a bit more sexy maybe. But sometimes it's okay to take that that marketing job that is a bit more operational. Maybe it's you're getting you know, a little bit more experience, but obviously you're not going to be doing the you know, having the sexy, beautiful job that you're dreaming of. But yeah, it's still a foot in the door, and yeah, it's a great story, Greg, and really thanks for sharing it. You know, before we wrap up the episode, maybe you could tell us where we can find you online if people listening want to ask you a question or connect with you.
Yeah, if anyone is interested in talking to me further about my career or about Brainbase, my email is simply greg@brainbase.com. Find me on LinkedIn as well. If you're going to send me a friend request, write a message, because I get a lot of requests on LinkedIn. And sometimes if I don't know who you are and there's no message, I don't always accept, because I feel like I get a lot of spam requests on LinkedIn these days. So if you're going to add me on LinkedIn, please send a message so I know where you found me and what you'd like to speak about. But yeah, definitely greg@brainbase.com or on LinkedIn. I'm happy to talk about my career. If anyone needs job advice, whatever it is, you know, please reach out to me.
Awesome. Thank you so much again for your time, Greg.
Yes, thank you for having me. It was great chatting with you.